Okay, I'll do some introductions of other colleagues and directors shortly, but my name is Steve Noonan, and I manage the finance activities of the company, and I'll take you through the first part of this presentation. In the very first instance, I bring your attention to the first page of the presentation, and I'll start to share that with you now. Okay. In the first instance, I'll bring your attention to the first page, an important notice and contains certain disclaimers. We published this on the bondholders' website earlier today, so you may have read it, but in any event, if you haven't, I would urge you to do so. So moving on to the contents, so similar to last year, I think it's pretty self-explanatory and indicates the nature of the material we'll go through today. There'll be an opportunity for questions at the end of the presentation. So moving on to the agenda, we're going to present you with a brief reminder of the project and then the key operational financial issues that have faced the company over the past year. And we'll also address the outlook for the company and the project. As I mentioned earlier, there will be an opportunity to raise questions at the end. And for those of you using Teams, please feel free to use the raise your hand symbol or otherwise indicate that you want to ask a question. And if you state your name and organization, I'd be grateful. So that would apply, obviously, to most people, those people on the telephone, which may be most of you, actually. Okay, welcome. So this is I welcome you to the sixth annual investor presentation. And we have with us here today two directors of the company, Chris Field and Graham Farley, who represent the equity investors in the project, effectively managing the project on behalf of certain Dalmore managed funds. Chris is a Dalmore employee and joins as a director, taking over from Nick Axum in May this year. Graham has been a director since early 2020, but has been involved in this project for a number of years prior to them, but also involved in other OFTO projects. In addition, Hamza Malik, who's a general manager and employee of Frontier Power, will be available for questions at the end. I'm also accompanied by colleagues from Frontier Power as well, Mike Edgar, who's a technical director, and Tim Price, who's financial controller, and Laura Shaw from IML, who provides financial services to the company, is also available. Mike will provide the voiceover on all operational matters and the outlook, and I will deal with the finance matters. And the directors and Hamza and others will be available for questions at the end as necessary. This is an industry that uses a lot of acronyms and abbreviations and such like. So we provided a slide at the back of the pack with some of those as used here and which are commonly used in this industry, which you can consult. So the background, this is no different really to last year, but it's a reminder of the project. Before we get into the operational details, there is no changes in the background to the last investor report, and indeed the last year's investor presentation. And they're laid out on the background slide, as you can see. But I would highlight the following point. The project is a transmission project and is separate both operationally and commercially from the wind farm. And as the slide shows, the wind farm is capable of providing clean renewable energy to approximately 350,000 homes. However, they can't be delivered to those homes without the transmission system that the WAS Transmission Project owns and operates. The project transmission assets comprise the offshore platform, two subsea cables, two land cables, and is connected to the wind farm at the offshore platform end and to the onshore grid owned by National Grid Electricity Transmission PLC at the land end in Heysham. WAS Transmission, you will know, has a perpetual offshore transmission license issued by the authority with a 20-year revenue incentive term, which commenced in August 2015. As mentioned earlier, the equitable interest is vested in funds managed by Dalmore Frontier Power provides management services of the project, and IML provides certain financial resources to manage the accounting and other financial aspects of the project. Moving on to the next slide, showing you the details of the a few more details of Dalmore Capital, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, Frontier Power as the management services provider, and IML, who provide the accounting and finance services to the company. Right, so now I'm going to move on. Well, I've moved on to operational performance, and I'm handing over to Mike, who will go through in detail the aspects of this. But I, first of all, I need to put myself on mute. So hold on a moment. Mike.
Hello. Just sort out the echo a little bit there. Okay, so thanks, Steve. So just quickly going to run through the operational performance highlights, which are largely described in the investment report that you will have received. So first of all, great news that the health and safety performance of the O&M contractor continues to be good, with no reportable incidents in accordance with the RIDOR regulations. The other thing to note, from an environmental point of view, we have a number of marine license obligations, reporting of work that's done offshore and such like, and those have been discharged in accordance with the obligations. As we're all well aware, obviously COVID has been very dominant within the news, and certainly within operational functions such as WADS. I'm pleased to say that there were no real impacts of COVID, and in fact the way that it was managed with the operational staff was a creation of bubbles, appropriate testing. So for example, when I went up to perform the offshore audit, you know, all visitors need to go through the flow test procedure and establish that they're not with COVID, and then they can sort of get offshore and visit the site. And that same sort of rigor has been applied all the way through the pandemic as it transpires, and to the extent now that this whole process is business as usual. There's particular guidance that's given to the electricity industry from BEIS directly, and this is adhered to, along with the more general guidance that's given to the general public. But you know, the positive thing there is it's not really inhibited any of the essential work that we've needed to undertake. So if I could quickly move on now to the planned and unplanned maintenance. The availability has been very good from WADS, and in fact, notwithstanding certain issues that have happened at the National Grid Electricity Transmission Heysham site, the availability has actually been very good, and we've the large part of the maintenance associated with the site has been done with very low impact on availability. What you will see from the slide there is that there have been two faults over 2021 at the Heysham substation, which have impacted on the physical availability of WADS assets. However, the good news is that the WADS assets operated correctly following these faults, and they have isolated from the system so that things are sort of a safe, appropriate inspections taken place and circuits restored. Now, the way that this availability will be treated, we do need to go through due process and explain to the regulator what's happened, and that the WADS assets behaved correctly before we can confirm that the availability will be treated as an emergency de-energisation in one case and an exceptional event in the other. But we're confident that this is the case, and therefore assuming that overall the availability is very good, as set out in the report that you have to hand. So the only other thing to note is relatively small level of outages concerning the two harmonic filters, which one harmonic filter was damaged during the fault and this needed to be isolated. And then we have an ongoing warranty issue with the other harmonic filter in balance. And we are taking the opportunity whilst the circuits were out to isolate that and actually address the issue. But, you know, overall, we expect the impact on availability to be pretty small. So if I could just ask Steve to just bring us on to the next slide, please. So warranty work, as we've reported previously, the warranties are nearing, have expired, apart from a few sort of legacy issues where we've notified that there is a potential warranty claim, and this relates to the SVC circuit breaker, an offshore transformer, and the filter, as well as some 400 kV equipment. So I'll just take each of those in turn. The SVC circuit breaker has now been repaired, and the warranty has on that repair has been extended to reflect this of a year. The offshore transformer, although this has been a notified warranty claim, the actual issue is a small weep of transformer oil, which, as you'll see there from the slide, is a relatively small amount, 1% of the transformer's capacity over about 5 years. We continue to monitor this. We continue to capture the weeping oil so that it's safely disposed of once it's collected. Those two first items, not really any issues of note. Similarly, the SVC filter, you'll have seen from the previous slide that we are now actually trying to address this minor imbalance issue. The urgency has increased a little bit on the basis that the imbalance alarms that appear from time to time are becoming more frequent, and therefore, you know, we're having to accelerate the remedial action. But you know, this is a tertiary piece of equipment and really doesn't affect the direct availability of the equipment of the overall asset. And finally, you know, Graham Farley, one of the directors on here today, has been working very hard in terms of securing the warranty extension for the 400 kV switchgear, which was repaired in 2019, and he successfully negotiated a warranty extension till 2022. So, you know, the actual repairs that have been undertaken are due a 2-year inspection by the contracting party offering the warranty, which should sort of further confirm the positive repair. So just a quick comment on the preemptive marine management organisation licence. We have there are a number of obligations under the licence. We also have a preemptive licence. I think that's my description rather than a technical one, but basically this allows us, in the event of a cable failure, to undertake work expediently to reduce any loss of availability. So it's very much a risk mitigation tool, if I can describe it that way. But, you know, we're not anticipating using it in anger. It just reduces the risk that we're exposed to. Finally, sticking with the marine aspect and cables, we undertook a bathymetric survey in late 2020, and the reports came available to that really articulated the interpretation of that work. And I'm pleased to say that we did not find any cable free spans during that survey, but it was evident that there is some continued seabed movement, which effectively ends up covering some of the exposures and then leaving some of the others exposed. But you know, these are pretty small areas in aggregate, and therefore it, the advice from our provider is that there does not need to be any remedial action. And there are two specific aspects along the cable route, one of which is the Barrow crossing, and that that has shown to be stable. But, you know, again, we do observe some seabed mobility, but this is not really of any due concern. Finally, on the actual offshore substation, we have observed some scour on two of the southern platform legs. However, we have had this confirmed by the O&M provider that the structural integrity still remains sound. And so on that basis, we are going to be undertaking the next survey in 2023. If I could spotted a typographical error in the previous slide. So if I can just ask Steve to flip that up and I'll just highlight it. So there's the availability there on the second bullet in the planned and unplanned maintenance thing. It says there 16,877 megawatt hours, and in fact it should be 16,977 megawatt hours, as you'll find in the report. So for those eagle-eyed amongst you, that's hopefully one question you won't now need to ask. So if I could flip on, we will reissue that to correct that error. So just moving finally on from my bit onto the operational performance highlights, slide three. I did touch on it when I talked about the 400 kV switchgear warranty. But as many of you will recall, we had an exceptional event in 2019 where there was a considerable remedial work done on 400 kV switchgear, which was which the regulator agreed to, so availability was restored to what it would otherwise have been, and we commenced collecting the performance credits from the 1st of April 2021. Picking up a summary really of where we are from an availability point of view, that the cumulative reported availability through to the 31st of July 2021 since asset transfer has been 99.69%, which we're very pleased with. Now, it just from the year concerned since we last spoke, the availability has dropped just a touch there to 99.32% within that year. This all, I suppose it's just noting that this is based on how we are, we expect the classification of outages to be made during 2021, as discussed in the previous two slides. Finally, I guess it's worthwhile confirming that we still have maintained good relationships with our key providers and stakeholders, namely National Grid Electricity Transmission, National Grid Electricity System Operator, and Ofgem the Authority. the financial security for the lenders and indeed the Ørsted, the O&M contractor, sorry, Ørsted Scottish Power Renewables contractor. So with that, I shall pass back over to Steve.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike. So we're going to move on now to the... the financial performance highlights. And as you would hope, and I certainly hope, this is all very boring because you don't want adventure in this area. So we have got split into three areas: the senior debt structure, the key ratios, and a bit of a commentary. The company's structure shows the senior bonds outstanding as at the end of August. Sorry, at the end of June, as reflected in the investor report, of 202.5 billion. We've still got RPI swaps in place for 75% of the revenue, which gives us certainty around the net cash flows accruing into the project and the ability to then meet the senior debt service accordingly. And the PBCE letter of credit are equivalent to 15% of the bond principal is still available and undrawn. Okay, some healthy ratios. I won't read those out. But just summarise below on the commentary, the transmission revenue which we're currently collecting in the current financial year, which is the year ending 31st of March 2022, of 25.3 million, and we're collecting that in accordance with the standard conditions agreed with National Grid Electricity System Operator. And that continues to be settled as you would expect in accordance with those standard conditions, essentially on commodity terms within 14-15 days of the end of the month. And then following the successful exceptional event claim relating to the SF6 repairs, as mentioned, we had a successful negotiation with Ofgem, and we are collecting the credits relating to that outage that would otherwise have been entitled to collect in a prior period during this particular year. Consequently, the 25 plus million revenue is higher than would otherwise normally be seen. Operating costs for the end of June are in line with budget. Payments to contractors, key contractors, continue to be made in accordance with the agreed payment terms. We've met all our key financial deliverables, including the filing of regulatory accounts. There's been no event of default. Cumulative debt service from financial close through to June 21 was 98.9 million. And the PBCE, as I've mentioned before, remains undrawn. And the letter of credit stands at 30.4 million at the end of June. Boring, but predictable, and that is good news in the case of this particular project. Mm-hmm. So having just summarised that, I'm going to hand back to Mike now, and then he will take you through the outlook and the priorities over the next 12 months.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So right at the top of the list there, we will be looking to maintain focus on health, safety and environment, and we do that in partnership with our O&M provider. We don't expect that to change. That will be there at this time next year. Similarly, we'll be looking to maintain a high availability performance, and along with that attract the performance credits that we've come to enjoy. We will be managing out the remaining warranty legacy issues, but by and large, the assets that we have, the warranties have expired, and we're into sort of normal good practice really with managing those. We continue to apply the good industry practice in terms of managing the assets and working in close cooperation with our O&M contractor, but also we're supplementing this with sharing knowledge through the Energy Network Association and other asset managers of similar assets to ensure that we maintain up-to-date knowledge of what good industry practice actually is. We will be managing I'm looking to ensure that the both the emergency deinitiations that we experienced in March and July will be managed appropriately, and so that any that there will be no performance issues or very minimal performance issues relating to those outages that were principally as a result of third party issues. So the only final thing with this is that we will be looking to get approval of a draft decommissioning plan following clarification from Ofgem and BEIS on the exact requirements and allowances made within the licence. So this is a process that is quite protracted in the industry. And we, you know, we're involved with the debate as well as with the liaisons with the key stakeholders, and this will move forward in due course. But I'm not expecting it to move too quickly, if I'm being frank. So, along with that, I think we can move on to questions. So, in order to manage this, reasonably, if you can put your hand up there, I think that if you're familiar with Teams, this will all be very familiar to you. So just that top right icon there with a wavy hand. Any questions? So we'll give you a minute.
Sorry, can you hear me? Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Oh, hang on, I'll just try and go off speed. Well, just to ask, it's Orlando Finney from NG. Sorry, I don't seem to have the icon on my screen to click for some reason, my team screen. It's that bit's missing for some reason. I can't find that. It appears everything's going fairly well. I just wanted to check one thing on the decommissioning issue. How significant is that? Just to put some quantification on it would be helpful. And just separately on the historic DSCR, the headline ratio pre-PBCE looks very close to lockup. I just wanted to check, it's obviously trended down there from a slightly higher level last year. I just want to check what you're expecting there. Thank you.
Okay, well, if I pick up the decommissioning issue, I think the principal new things that have been introduced by BEIS in the guidance of 2019 has been the introduction of VAT on decommissioning costs, and the rationale. So the rationale behind the reserves that need to be made for decommissioning is, In the event that the OFTO is insolvent, which frankly is unlikely, the obligation to decommission the OFTO assets would fall upon BEIS, and it just seems to be a quirk of intergovernmental costs that they can't recover back from themselves. And you know, I don't pretend to justify it. It is what it is, effectively. But what this means is that we potentially need to reserve an extra 20% VAT. And along with that, the BEIS also do not want to take any commodity risk. And why is this important for us? Well, we're able to offset scrappage, so that's the copper within the cables and the offshore platforms, etc. We cannot use those resale costs to offset the cost of decommissioning, but BEIS aren't really prepared to take any commodity risk on that. So there's two principal areas of cost that might be incurred. On the positive side, however, we know that some OFTOs have got relief set out within their license for these two specific items. And that our transmission license does allow us to seek recovery of these additional expenditures, but we haven't reached an agreement with the regulator at the moment. And really, that's where the industry discussion is. It's about, you've made that allowance for some OFTOs, it's appropriate that you make that allowance for all the others where this is included. So that's the principal change, really. And reserves are expected to commence from 2025.
I think it's important, it's Graham Farley here, Mike. I think it's important just to say that it is an industry-wide discussion with BEIS and with Ofgem that's ongoing. It's not just specific to WADs.
Agreed, yes.
Yeah, and going, does that answer your question in relation to that particular aspect? You've got one about the debt service cover ratio, but does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. I mean, if you did have to provision an extra 20% on the VAT, how significant, just to give me an idea, easy idea, is that for you?
I don't think we can answer that without looking at that in significance. But I think we're confident that we will make some progress with the regulators. That's probably as far as I could say at the moment.
Yes,
okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean the debt service cover ratio is a slight anomaly because it's reflecting. It's been prepared at a time as at the end of June, which doesn't really accord with the way that the revenues are being generated from this project. So the revenues there's a revenue reset at the beginning of April in each year because it reflects the regulatory year, which is 1st of April through 31st of March. The way that this project's been set up is to measure the debt service cover ratios at June and December. So you're picking up partial years of two regulatory settlements, if you like, or two regulatory streams. So a partial year in relation to the current year that we're in at the moment, and another partial year in relation to the old year. And the significance of that is that we have got a significantly higher amount of revenue in the current year than we had in the prior year because we didn't have the performance credits. So obviously we were aware of that and managed it accordingly, but the peculiarity is you get this slightly odd number popping up in this at the end of June as a consequence of that. But if we had been able to bill when in the specific year to which this issue arose, this would have smoothed that impact accordingly.
Yeah. Thank you. And I presume with that you're expecting the relevant the real number to trend up slightly from here, in line with the higher revenues you're currently experiencing.
All other things being equal, yes. It all depends upon the pattern, the expected pattern of expenditures, and some of that, obviously as to how they accord with our expectations. And the other, just the mechanics of how the debt service cover ratio works, is the reserving is essentially done against a future expectation of cost. Obviously, that cost is not 100% known at any one point in time, and of course. The interesting thing is that you're reserving for the cost of an activity, but the debt service cover ratio is measuring it as a minimum, to avoid lockup, as a minimum 1.1 of those costs. So it is slightly odd way of doing it, but that's how it's it works. But in principle, the answer to your question is yes.
Lovely. And just a silly one to check on that, and perhaps with some of the equity investors present, if it did lock up, does that create an issue for the equity investors, or can you just remind us in terms of any dividend flows? Thank you.
So the project pays out sub-debt interest only. So if we did it go into lock up, the shareholders would obviously miss out on a payment or two while we're in lockup, but there are no dividends made from this project currently.
Great, thank you very much. Appreciated.
Are there any other questions from anybody without having to put their team's hand up? I think we'll be very happily take any verbal questions. Okay, well, if there's no further questions, we will draw this presentation to a close. And we, as I mentioned, we will put the revised spreadsheet, the revised presentation to reflect that, picking up that typo that Mike mentioned earlier. And we will put the audio recording on later on this week. So thank you very much for joining, much appreciated. And maybe we'll speak to you next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.